This is in the matter of criminal file 2011-37, State of South Dakota versus James Frederick Harris. Mr. Harris, this is a time and place set for sentencing in this matter. The record reflects that on February 21st, 2012, you entered a plea of guilty to second-degree manslaughter and driving under the influence first offense. Are those still your pleas?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. There's been a pre-sentence investigation completed in this matter. Mr. Burns, is there anything you wish to take issue with?
No, Your Honor.
Anything you wish to offer on behalf of your client?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. Well, Your Honor, September 23rd, 2011, the community had dismissed, was changed dramatically. There was a fairly senseless act that took the life of Zach Eichstead. Nothing that I say today, Jim Harris or Mr. Gass or even the court can do to change that fact that Zach Eichstead's no longer with us. Zach's family and friends, they're going to have to continue to mourn his passing, and that's going to be very hard. Jim, in all likelihood, is going to go to prison. He's going to lose his freedoms, and he's going to get to think about what he's done for the rest of his life. And that, too, will be very hard. The issue today we're looking at is, what do we do with Mr. Harris? And how long does he sit in jail for the things that he did back on September 23rd? I know some folks have called and written letters and say they would like to see Jim get the maximum sentence of 10 years. They say that, and I can understand that, because they believe that Zach won't have the opportunities that Mr. Harris is going to have in the future. Eventually he will be out of incarceration, and it's somewhat human nature to want to get an eye for an eye or to punish those who've done wrong by us. So I can certainly understand their point of view. But there are others who would say that you should be lenient with Mr. Harris. He made a tragic lapse in judgment. He was terribly intoxicated, got behind the wheel of his pickup, and sped through town and ran over Zach Eichstead. This was not an intentional act, and I don't think anybody would claim that. This was a mistake. This was a terrible lapse in judgment. But it's a mistake that thousands of people make throughout our country. And it's unfortunate, but it occurs. Jim Harris drove drunk. Jim can't change that now, no matter how much he wishes he could. Jim, in his life, has had only a handful of minor criminal infractions. He's never spent any significant time in jail. He has no previous DUIs. Jim has graduated from high school, has always been employed in the construction industry. In fact, that's what brought him here to South Dakota. He had been working here in DeSmit doing construction. Jim also has received many letters of support from family and friends. One showing his remorse that he's expressed, but also showing his positive characteristics. Jim is a relatively healthy individual. He was at the time of the accident. Since then, obviously, he's been incarcerated for over 6 months. He now takes antidepressants. He takes anti-anxiety medication, and he takes sleeping pills. All those are directly correlated to this accident and this set of events. I raise that to show that this is not something that he's taking lightly. This is not something that he has brushed off. This is something that is in his mind, and in his dreams, and in his nightmares. One of the goals for the court is to ensure that Jim doesn't reoffend. If he goes to prison, he will receive counseling. He'll receive alcohol classwork. He'll receive an education that will prepare him for a future without alcohol. The court does not need to impose a maximum sentence in order for those things to occur. It's been my experience that individuals who want to change their lives with regard to alcohol use, if they choose to do so, a taste of prison life, a taste of loss of freedom, is what is going to spark that individual to make that decision. Sending him away for 10 years is not necessary if he's going to make that change. And Jim's entirely expressed that opinion to me, and I believe will to the court, that he understands the problems that occurred. He understands the tragedy that he caused, and he wants to make sure that he never puts himself or anyone else in the type of position that he's found himself in here today. And we believe that a prison sentence coupled with suspending a portion of that sentence will accomplish all goals for the court. There'll be certainly a penalty for his actions, but there'll also be guidance through a period of probation and parole with that time hanging over his head to ensure that Jim is making the right decisions, that he's taking the right path, that he's making those changes in his life necessary to ensure that he's never in this position again. Jim will tell you if he could take it all back, he would in a heartbeat, and not because he's finding himself in trouble. Certainly that's secondary. But he is a young man himself. He's a young man who's been affected by this tragedy, and he doesn't want to see any more families go through that. And he is truly remorseful, and he would ask the court to consider a sentence where you suspend penitentiary time and give him the opportunity to prove that this was an accident, was a terrible lapse in judgment, but he's not a person that just needs to be warehoused away in a prison. He can be a positive member of society. We ask you to give him that opportunity. Thank you.
Anything from the state?
Yes, Your Honor. I've reviewed the pre-sentence investigation. I believe it's thorough and complete. I've discussed the matter at length with the victim's family, and I would like to, at the same time, express my sympathy again to the family and thank them for all of their courtesies that they've extended me in attempting to work through this. I'd also like to thank the South Dakota Highway Patrol, the Kingsbury County Sheriff's Office, and DCI for the countless hours that they've put into this. I never met Zachary Eichstead. He was a student who was a 16-year-old high school student in DeSmet. I wished I had met him. Unfortunately, I learned about him through his death. In many ways, he was an ordinary person, and in many ways, he was a remarkable person. He was ordinary in the sense that he was 16 years old, that he attended high school, and that he had been at the homecoming football. He was ordinary in the sense that he was taking photos for his school and that he was walking home with friends. He was with two friends and his brother when he was killed. He was ordinary in the sense that he liked paintball. He liked talking around the fire pit. He liked to hunt, and he liked to hike. He liked to search for asparagus with his family. He liked to ride bike. He liked to skateboard.
He was ordinary in the sense that his family kept a growth chart on a wall to see how much he'd grown each year. He was ordinary in the sense that he had a summer job at Pizza Hut. He was ordinary in that he loved his family and his family loved him. He was ordinary in growing up in small town South Dakota. He was ordinary in the sense that it could have been anyone that was killed by Mr. Harris's actions. Zach Eichstedt was also remarkable. He was remarkable in the sense of the effect that he had on his family. He was remarkable in the sense of the effect that he had on those around him. He's been described as intelligent, as having a keen sense of humor, that he could make you laugh. He was smart, he was funny, he had an amazing wit, he was considerate, he was polite, he was probably the sort of kid that could have done anything with his life. He was remarkable in the sense that the people around him cared for him, particularly shown by the amount of grief that that his fellow students have exhibited and the outpouring of grief in the community. He was remarkable in the protection of his younger brother. He was remarkable in changing people for the better without them even knowing it. He was remarkable in the sense that he's not forgotten, and he was remarkable in his use of his gift to life in the short time that he had it. These are all statements that have come to me through contact with the family and members of the community. Sometimes I think it's easy as part of the law enforcement system to step back and perhaps to a degree forget that we're dealing with human tragedy. We're dealing with real people. We're dealing with flesh and blood. In this case, we're dealing with a 16-year-old high school student who was needlessly killed on the streets half a block off Main Street in DeSmet, South Dakota. Unfortunately, Mr. Harris's activities are also remarkable. His record indicates that he has convictions for domestic assault, 2 counts of disorderly conduct, possession of marijuana, careless driving, stop sign violation. In fact, he wasn't even supposed to be in South Dakota. He was on a probation violation out of Minnesota. Part of that probation violation requirement was that he complete a road rage course. Apparently never got done. From the time that I first became aware of this and was at the scene that night, the word that's gone through my mind is senseless. Absolutely senseless. There is no legitimate reason. There is no excuse. There is no mistake. There is no accident. It's just pure senseless. He can't say, "I didn't know. I didn't realize the danger." His explanation is, "I was blacked out." What that really means is, to me, "I was so drunk, I don't remember." That's a pretty damning explanation. "I was so drunk, I don't remember what I was doing." What we know is that he drove to a bar, that he had some drinks, that he drove from that bar to another bar, that he had more drinks, and that's at the point of time he says he blacked out. The investigation from that point reveals that he left the second bar, that he drove from the second bar, that he had a passenger with him, that he drove to his house, that he told his passenger to get out, that he drove from his house, that he was apparently driving toward his girlfriend's residence, and a few blocks after having the passenger get out of his house, drove by another residence so fast that the woman at the residence called the bar to tell the bar owner to tell Jimmy not to be speeding through my neighborhood. Less than 3 blocks from that location, he drove through a stop sign right out here a block and a half away, stop sign on the north end of Main Street, drove through that stop sign, one eyewitness says 50 miles an hour, no attempt to stop. Less than 50 yards from that stop sign, he ran over and killed Mr. Eichstedt. There is no accident. Mr. Harris made all of those decisions. He chose to drink, he chose to drive, he chose to speed, he chose to run the stop sign. Did he intend to kill Mr. Eichstead? No. But at what point do senseless acts become criminal? At a point far less than Mr. Harris's point. Absolutely senseless. Mr. Harris made all of these decisions. Mr. Eichstead never had a chance. He was hit by a car, truck going 40, 50 miles an hour. His brother right next to him was hit in the arm. Two other teenagers right beside this incident were, if there's anything that's fortunate about this, it's that we're not here on four fatalities. After he hit Mr. Eichstead, he left. He kept going. Goes down the street here a couple of blocks, turns around, parks by the girlfriend's house. That's where the officers find him. He knew where he was going. He knew what he was doing. He made all of these decisions. Any one of these at which he could have stopped and he could have said, I'm too drunk to drive. Passenger, give me a ride home. I'm not going. Somebody come and pick me up. Maybe I shouldn't blow through the stop sign. Those are all decisions that he made. They're all criminal. He had the choice. Mr. Eichstead didn't. Your Honor, I'd submit that it's not just an accident. It's not just a mistake. It's not just poor judgment. It's not just reckless. It's criminal. There's a reason that we have a law against drunk driving. This is exactly the reason. Mr. Harris criminally killed Zachary Eichstead. His acts criminally hurt Mr. Eichstead's family, criminally hurt his friends, and they were a danger to anybody that may have been out that evening. It's senseless, it's disgusting, it's selfish, it's criminal. Any leniency that may have been considered in this has been included, I believe, as part of a plea agreement. If Mr. Harris does every day of a 10-day or of a 10-year sentence, which would be the maximum possible, he'll still get out. He'll still have his chance, and that's much more of a chance than he afforded Mr. Eichstead. Based on the severity of the acts, based on the results, I ask the court to impose the maximum possible sentence. Along with that, I would ask the court to impose restitution in the amount of $7,183.74. I'd ask the court to impose costs of prosecution of $1,597.80. And I'd ask that those fees be included in the judgment for costs pursuant to SDCL 23A-2727. Most of all, in addition to what I've said, I'd like the court to know that the Eichstead family wants to put this behind them. They were informed in agreement with the resolution here that brings us here today, and one of the major considerations going through their mind was not to have to put their remaining son on the witness stand at trial. But at the same time, under all of the circumstances, I think the only logical conclusion is the maximum possible sentence. Thank you.
Mr. Harris, anything you want to say on your own behalf?
Where do I begin? I did not set out to do this intentionally. It was a senseless thing to happen. My most sincere apologies for this great tragedy. I ask the family for forgiveness, but understand if you can. Your lives will never be the same, and neither will mine. I wish I could take Zach's place. Not a day goes by that I don't think of all the grief that has been caused. I will never forget either. None of the family and friends deserve to go through this. No one does. Ultimately, it comes down to my decisions and my responsibility for me and my actions. I wish I could change the events that happened. My heart goes out to everyone that has been affected. I am sorry from the bottom of my heart. I am sorry.
Thank you. Anything else before I pronounce sentence?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Harris, I agree with much of what both attorneys have said. This is a real tragedy. Not just because Zachary died, but the impact it's had on everyone's life is in this courtroom, including your own. Lots of lives have been changed, and not necessarily for the better. When we talk about sentencing, we consider many things. We look at your past behavior. We look at the nature of the crime. In this case, it was a reckless act. We look at the relevant injuries, and in this case, Zachary was killed, and all of his friends and family were negatively impacted. And you are the sole person involved in that. Your criminal history shows a number of prior misdemeanors, most of them related to alcohol or marijuana use, some anger issues. You violated probation on at least two occasions. To the good, you've demonstrated an affirmative acceptance of responsibility. And as I read the pre-sentence investigation and some of the comments that were made by your friends, I realize you're not a totally bad man, that there are some things that happened here that have had a great impact. You killed a young man. It wasn't because of a medical issue. It's because you were drunk with a blood test of .256. You knew at the time you had an alcohol problem. You'd had an alcohol assessment in 2001. You went to treatment in Minnesota. I believe that was in 2011. Went to alcohol classes in January at that time. I've taken into consideration the fact that you'll be parole eligible after approximately serving one half of your sentence. The penitentiary will give you a more exact date. On the DUI conviction, I'm going to assess liquidated costs. I'll sentence you to 193 days in jail. I'll assess the court-appointed attorney's fees. You'll get credit for 193 days served in jail prior to sentencing. Your driver's license is revoked for a period of 10 years after release from incarceration. But that's really not why we're here. We're here on the manslaughter charge. It'll be the order of the court that you'll serve 10 years in the South Dakota State Penitentiary. You'll pay victim restitution in the following: the cremation costs of $5,313, two medical bills equaling $516, a hotel bill of $297, food for the memorial service of $354.62, the obituary bill of $48.52. You'll pay the blood test costs of $132 and court costs of $104. You'll pay your court-appointed attorney's fees. As I said, with the DUI, your driver's license is revoked for a 10-year period. Costs pursuant to SDCL 23-A-27-27 will be imposed. That's transcript preparation of $1,139.60 and the blood test costs of $142. The victim's family is asked to be reimbursed for time off from their jobs. I don't believe our restitution law allows that. The state is asked for towing and vehicle storage, and I don't believe that's allowed. With that, you're remanded to the custody of the sheriff.
Your Honor, there is one slight amendment I would request, and it looks like the transcript preparation costs were actually $955.80 instead of the $1,100.
All right. So amended.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We'll be in recess.